This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with the second part of our interview with David Milch, the co-creator of the TV cop series NYPD Blue, and Detective Bill Clark, a creative consultant for the series. Many of the cases on the show are based on his work. Clark was a New York City homicide detective for nearly 25 years. Milch and Clark have collaborated on the new book, True Blue, The Real Stories Behind NYPD Blue. You know, this subject comes up in the book that you co-wrote together, True Blue, about NYPD Blue and the stories behind it. David, you had asked Detective Bill Clark if he actually ever, you know, roughed anybody up to get a confession.
And, yes.
And, well, Bill, you give a description not of roughing somebody up, but of making the motions just to kind of inspire a certain amount of fear, I guess, in the suspect. You say, you know, you locked the door, took your watch off and put your ring on the table and said, now we're going to talk about what I'm here for. You took this man's life and you have to understand if what it takes to make you give that up is laying hands on you, I'm going to beat you till you beg to die. Now, would you follow up on that, or is that just a threat to let the person know you're serious?
No, I would think, fortunately, most people growing up in this country have seen so many movies where cops and detectives beat a guy senseless that they, if you just make them think that we're going to get to that point somewhere along the line, it has the same effect as if you beat their head up against the wall for 2 hours. And I'm not some kind of guy that gets any pleasure out of hitting you people, so I that's not my act. But if they feel that if it goes down to the wire, that's one of the options. It's something they think about. I don't think about it that much. I'm playing a game with this guy. I mean, I've done interrogations for 12 hours before a guy confessed.
12 hours in one sitting?
One sitting, one person. I just come in and out of the room. One that I remember was a triple homicide. Guy was in for a rape that... if I didn't get a confession, he was going to go in for that rape, and those three homicides never would have been solved. And I really wasn't sure he did it up until about the 11th hour.
Bill, how did you keep your concentration during a 12-hour interrogation?
Well, I mean, there were times I'd step out of the room and I'd just clear my head. I mean, it is very, very tiring and at times. And the thing that you're terrified of, and I've had it happen where you've got a guy and you spend 4 or 5 hours and then you ask some stupid question that you know set it back to ground zero again. You know, you have to be very careful what you say. And
like what? What could be a setback like that?
If you're looking to get a guy to flip on his co-defendants and you say something about being a rat or something that, I mean, I'm using real bad examples, but I think you get the idea.
It gives
of what
the
I'm
wrong
saying.
Emotional connotation to Bill's position.
So something that's going to insult the suspect.
Yeah, what he's right. He's looking to make the guy feel that he's sympathetic towards him. And the other thing that Billy will do, and it's something that we haven't been able to do particularly successfully on the show because of the time element, is that when Billy goes at a guy, sometimes he'll have only one piece. He'll have a license plate, or he'll have the driver's license, or so, and he may not use it for 6 hours. He'll go at the guy with irrelevancies to exhaust him or to build up a particular state of emotional receptivity. And then finally, when he uses the piece of evidence he's got, it invokes a whole range of knowledge that Bill has in the guy's mind that Billy doesn't have. And so it's a very delicate emotional framework that he's trying to generate there. And that's one reason why Billy likes to work by himself.
The character of Andy Sipowicz, the Dennis Franz character, is, I think, a really interesting, complex portrait. And here's somebody who's such a decent person, and he's so likable. But on the other hand, he can be very rigid in his thinking and very close-minded about certain things. You know, he's got his homophobia. He's got his racist elements, too.
Yeah.
And you've dealt with that on the show. And I think it's interesting to take a person who's likable and also reveal a degree of racism about them.
Yeah.
I'd like you to talk a bit about how you've tried to deal with both of those elements.
Well, New York City is composed of discrete kind of ethnic configurations, and people who are going to join the police department are going to carry with them the sets of prejudices and myths and realities that come from having grown up in those neighborhoods. And to have portrayed Sipowicz other than racist, I think would be ludicrous. We did a show where Fancy wound up taking Sipowicz to a rib joint and got him to understand that the kind of discomfort that Sipowicz was experiencing had nothing to do with any overt prejudice on the part of the people who were working there, but he knew that he wasn't welcome. And in the same way, I would be the last one to suggest that a black person who goes into a police precinct, no matter how fairly he's treated, isn't going to wind up feeling that he's on someone else's turf, because the police department remains predominantly, although not exclusively, the way it used to be, the province of whites. But in terms of the actual administration of justice, believe me, the police department is far better than people give it credit for being on that score.
David, there's a scene that you wrote for Andy Sipowicz, the Dennis Franz character. He's questioning a person who he believes is a suspect in a murder. It was a white victim, and the suspect is African-American.
Right.
And the African-American man challenges Sipowicz and says, you just think I'm a suspect because I'm black. I'm black and she was white, so you think I was involved with this. And then Sipowicz starts questioning him. I want you to, if you can remember, repeat some of the lines that Sipowicz uses there.
Well, what he says is, Mr. Futrell, have I been disrespectful to you? And the guy says, my having to be here is disrespectful, because this guy's a PhD candidate at Hunter or something. And the girl had dated this guy. The white girl, who was the only surviving member of the family, had dated this black fellow who's a PhD candidate. So Sipowicz is questioning the guy. Sipowicz says, our suspect profile, you fit the profile. The girl says, sometimes you're rough. I'm wondering whether you told any of your buddies about having been in this apartment. And the guy says, in other words, I may not be a criminal nigger, but you get enough niggers together, some of them have to be criminals. So what I do is I go to my buddies and I say, I'm boning this rich white girl, and here's the layout of her apartment. Is that the way you got it figured, detective? And Sipowicz sort of goes at that point, and he says, look, we're investigating a murder. It so happens the assholes that did this murder were black. Now, how do you want me to go with this? You want me to say, I'm sorry for the injustice you people have suffered for the past 400 years, but did you talk to any of your friends about the homicide? Should we do it that way? And the guy says, yeah, let's do it that way. So Sipowicz says, okay, well, I know that great African-American George Washington Carver discovered the peanut, but did you tell your friends about the layout of this apartment? So now there, it's quite clear. The guy says, well, you're a racist scumbag. And Sipowicz says, ouch, by which he means, you know, tell me something I don't already know.
Your opinions on Mark Furman, any thoughts you'd want to share on him?
Who are you asking that to?
Both of
you. Go ahead, Billy.
Well, I think that Mark Furman single-handedly set back law enforcement probably 5 years, maybe 10 years. I can't believe what I heard on that tape, and I just don't really want to go into it except to say that he has done more to hurt law enforcement than anybody in my memory.
On NYPD Blue, there's a fair amount of gunplay. I mean, the cops have to draw, you know, with some regularity. Bill, how often on the job did you actually have to pull your gun, and did you ever have to shoot anybody?
I worked in some tough areas. I mean, it was, I very rarely, if I was out there, I didn't have a day that I didn't have my gun in my hand. But I mean, as a detective, you're doing different things. You're locking people up every day. When I was in a robbery squad, we were sometimes coming in the morning and we'd hit houses after houses looking for guys, you know, and every time you hit that house, you'd had your gun in your hand. Did I discharge my weapon probably a dozen times, I guess, dozen separate incidents in the direction of people. I've many times. I've never shot anybody that I know of specifically that I'm the guy that shot him, but there were people shot in incidents I was involved in.
Do cops think that there's too much gunplay on cop shows?
Well, on our show, we don't do. I mean, if I had to think over the first two episodes, I think we actually probably had our guys fire the guns a couple of times.
First two seasons.
Right, yeah. The first two seasons, I'm sorry. Maybe fire the guns. When somebody fires a gun on our show, we show the effect, and it's not just a bullet going down the street and disappearing. We usually show it what it does to somebody, and we really don't take that lightly. We don't go for the excessive violence at all.
My guests are David Milch and Detective Bill Clark, NYPD Blue's co-creator and creative consultant. They've collaborated on a new book called True Blue, The Real Stories Behind NYPD Blue. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're back with NYPD Blue co-creator David Milch and with creative consultant Detective Bill Clark. On NYPD Blue, there's been a lot of relationships within the force. You know, cops dating other cops.
Yes, uh-huh.
And now, of course, Andy Sipowicz is married to the assistant DA, which is related. Bill, how much of this actually went on the force in New York when you were there?
Well, you asked the wrong guy, because I'm just recently got engaged to a girl who was my partner about 10 years ago. But, I mean, something that was said before that I guess I didn't go into in enough detail. We spend 8 hours, 10 hours, sometimes 36 hours with your partner working in a very intense job with dealing with all types of emotions. People who have just sustained the greatest loss of their life. They've lost their husband, their wife, their mother, their father, their sister, their brother, the breadwinner of the family. I mean, all of the things that happen to somebody when a homicide happens. And you're dealing with all of those emotions, and this is the person who tries, when you get alone, when you're in the car going from point A to point B, this is the person that you talk to, and hopefully you try to make some kind of semblance of sanity out of the whole thing and feel good enough that you can go on to the next step. And it's bound to make you very, very close with that person. And if that person happens to be a female, it's a together person who makes you, you know, it's just going to draw you closer together. Or if it's just the opposite, if you can't stand this person, it's going to drive you apart. So, again, in my experience, I've worked with several females, but as I said, one who was my partner, I've just recently got engaged to. So.
Were you romantically involved while you were partners?
No, but there was a certain attraction. There was no doubt about it, but... at that point, no, it wouldn't have been the right thing.
Is that a dangerous thing on the job when you feel that emotionally involved with somebody? You know, when that spark is there, even if you haven't acted on it, because your lives are both constantly in jeopardy.
No, but I can remember we're doing that in one of our episodes this year. You do get overly protective. I mean, this is, you know, you do cop stuff every day, and a guy goes in or a girl goes in to buy drugs or to make purchase of guns or stolen property, and naturally if you're really have heavy emotional feelings about the person or in fact in love with it does become the terror can take charge there for a few minutes. It happened to me one time. I know
what happened.
This girl who I had these feelings for was going in to purchase some stolen property, and it was a real nothing thing. It was, we had six detectives on the scene, and she was supposed to give a signal when she had made a thing, and it was supposed to be done in front of the house, and she went into the house, and then all of a sudden I started getting anxiety, like, what, something must be going wrong. And it was just strictly a question of me overreacting because I had feelings for the girl.
So what'd you do? I mean, did you go in and
No, I didn't.
You just sat there and were nervous, or did you...
The last time I experienced that, I was in Vietnam, and it was at night, it was pitch dark, and I was in an ambush patrol, and I started hearing things, and you get to control your fear, and that's basically what it was. It was just my controlling my fear, but a fear that shouldn't have even been there.
In the NYPD Blue book that you've collaborated on, True Blue, David, you make it seem like Bill was less than very enthusiastic about women as police officers. That, Bill, you thought women weren't, like, physically up to it.
Well, you're going to get me in trouble yet, huh?
I guess.
well, I mean, it's to me, in my manner of policing, it's a very physical job. As I told you in interrogations, my physical being, the way I look at somebody, they are intimidated by me. I'd be less than candid if that isn't part of the whole process of interrogation. Now, I just don't feel that an attractive 5'2", 100-pound woman is going to give you that same feel. Is there a role in law enforcement for women? Absolutely. There was women on the job when I came on the job, but I just don't think that they are physically able to do the job of police officer as I do it. You know, now, if you want to redefine the job and you want to think of a way that when two people are banging each other's heads together and you can walk into the middle of them and talk them out of fighting, then maybe there's a way. But I just think that I'm 6 foot tall, 220 pounds.
That's a lie. He weighs more than that.
And I've had people ready to rip my head off, and I've had a fight with every ounce of strength I have to save my life. And I think that to do that job, you need that. And I apologize to all the women in the world who will now hate me, but that's the way I feel.
How did you see women deal with encounters like that?
There's enough documented cases of that I don't really want to get into, but it's just something that's very, very difficult for a woman. And I want big, ugly cops coming to save me if I'm in trouble. I don't want somebody who can't physically do the job.
One of the things that Bill, and that we avoid, frankly, on the show, is that, unfortunately, cops sometimes wind up having to do more violence because they aren't capable of the modicum of violence which would control a situation. I think what Billy is avoiding saying is sometimes you might have a female cop who winds up discharging her weapon because she can't physically control the situation otherwise.
Bill, you retired from the New York City Police as from your job as a detective during the second season of NYPD Blue. While you were still working as a detective and consulting with the series, was there a new degree of, well, almost self-consciousness that entered your work? Would you be reporting on a case and in the back of your mind see it as an episode?
No, I mean, I did my job as I saw it. I never really thought if a case went down while I was doing it that this would be a good episode. No,
Billy is not someone who is comfortable with that kind of irony or distance when he's working as a detective. He takes that very, very seriously. And I know from speaking with him about cases that he was working on all during the period when he was still an active detective. But if you're a good detective, so much of that coincides with being a good storyteller, because what you're trying to do is sort of extrapolate a whole world or a whole personality from pieces of information. And so when Billy would talk about the cases he was working on, he didn't really need to rephrase for my purposes, because just Billy being Billy, and the way I think I say in the book, you know, when Billy would work on cases, you'd watch him get sick over the cases. They would just occupy his whole being, and when a case wasn't going well, he would be miserable and you couldn't talk to him, and so he was like the most beautiful sort of prism for both the case and for a cop reacting to the case.
David, new directions that the series will be taking this year. We have a pregnancy subplot brewing here.
Oh yeah, and I would expect that to come to a boil sooner rather than later. And there, if you watch for a few more episodes, you will see some surprising developments in terms of gender preference and some of the main characters and a few other things that you might not anticipate.
Interesting. Well, I want to thank you both very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
David Milch is the co-creator of NYPD Blue. Detective Bill Clark is the series creative consultant. Their new book is True Blue, The Real Stories Behind NYPD Blue. This is Fresh Air.